Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, it is an absolutely massive weekend of rugby, and we're going to preview it now. Brian O'Driscoll's with us. How you doing?
How are you?
You've recovered from your exploits on Wednesday night?
Yeah, really. The radio really show peaked on Wednesday when you have, what was it? Was it 2-1 or 3-2? And I fluked both my answers. So, yeah, it was a resounding victory for Captain Cunningham.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say you thought that it was probably some comment that you might make about the All Blacks that might be the thing that overshadowed the Lions announcement, but actually it was your quiz with Kenny Cunningham.
I can't tell you how many text messages people sent me saying what a great show it was. I'm glad that we were able to provide some humour for the people out there.
Speaking of which, you're getting a bit of trouble for some stuff you had on your Instagram account where you've managed to nicely mock together the...
Well, I didn't actually, I just stole it. I got sent it. Actually from a Scottish person on a WhatsApp group, and I said, can I steal that? And yeah, it's the Lion's Crest, but it's a modified version, and it was all in good humour, but there's a few people haven't taken it quite as such.
Scotland have responded pretty negatively.
Some people are really feeling it. It's too soon. It's too soon. Maybe if in a fortnight's time we'd be able to get away with that sort of thing, but no, it's raw.
And the New Zealand media pointing out that there are as many New Zealanders on the team as there are Scots on the team as well with them.
I just know it. Yeah, there's more Ulstermen on it. That's one thing that was pointed out by my brother-in-law who's from Derry.
Oh yeah, well, I like the way the team is kind of, the four nations are already coming together.
Yeah,
ripping themselves apart.
It's destiny. It's destiny.
They even watch the test series up in Scotland, I wonder, or they just turn their backs on the whole event. I mean, how can you watch it and not be angry?
Yeah.
Although we watched Lions Stores for a few years where there was little or no Irish representation.
It's been all right since
89, 93. I remember asking my dad why we were watching it.
Were you watching it though?
Yeah.
Did they actually have what? No one was watching in 93. 97 was the first of our
No one was watching. I was watching.
You're like a year younger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one was watching in 93. Would you come off it?
What are you talking about?
New Zealand, and it was in the middle of the night.
Were the games on TV?
They were in the morning on BBC.
Were they?
So like you'd get up and it'd be at 7 in the morning. I was up anyway.
Wow.
No, they had the afternoon games.
Who had the afternoon
in 93? No, they were in the middle of the night in 93.
You don't look like you know what you're talking about.
Oh, you're on the back foot now. You're on the back foot. That's an attack. Even Dave, come at me.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Maybe it was the 89 tour I'm talking about.
There we go. Slap it into reverse there.
But there was
you?
No Irishman on it. Now, I'll have to check Wikipedia to see whether there are any Irishmen on it.
Yeah. Is that not the Jeremy Davidson tour?
That was 97.
That was 97. Yeah, okay, all right.
But we had Farmore. We thought we'd get
four.
Eric Miller as well.
Four.
Yeah. Paul Wallace.
And three that made the test, and Eric was going to accept. He got unwell before the first test, and then Tim Robber filled in.
All right,
and stayed in for the remaining three.
Oh, so Miller didn't play the test. Oh, I always thought he played.
No,
93. I think the only Irishman on the test team was Nick Popplewell.
Google
like one. I don't have a phone with me.
Finny Cunningham
didn't play for the test side, did he?
No, but he was on tour.
Ah, come on. Sure, there's about 50 on tour by the time it comes to an end.
Wow, Vinnie Cunningham, there's a blast from the past. Right, let's talk about the games this weekend. So Claremont against Leinster, and we've got the Munster Saracens game. No, we've got the Claremont Leinster game live on Sunday.
It's not that hard. I'll write it out for you again if you want to.
Thanks, Evan. What time is the kickoff?
We've got full live and exclusive national radio commentary of Leinster Claremont, 3 o'clock kickoff from Leon on Sunday with myself, Andy Dunn, Liam Toland. We also have live coverage with myself and Liam from the Aviva Stadium tomorrow.
Okay, cool. That's Munster against Saracens.
We and BT Sport have the Munster game.
We managed to get off track here about five times in the first 3 minutes.
How did we start this?
I don't know. About 7:10, I think. Maybe 7:20. We'll start with the Leinster game, right? The Leinster team is named and there's no Sean O'Brien in it, and you're just thinking, this is going to be very difficult for Leinster to win because Claremont are brilliant. It's in France. They've got a great record there. No Sean O'Brien. Is it almost mission impossible?
It looks significantly tougher with no Sean O'Brien on the team sheet, I must say. I think if you look, compare the two packs, they've had a monstrous pack for a number of years, but they're really in sync with the rest of their game, with the fast, free-flowing game that they're playing. But I just look at Arturia and Vahamina in the second row against Dev Toner and Triggs. You look at that back row of Ruddock, Levy and Conan versus Yatto, Shuley and Lee, I just get the sense that, you know, we're going to have to play a fast game. I hope it's a dry day, and they're going to have to move them. But at the same time, Claremont are a fit team.
Yeah.
Not like their French counterparts.
They're not going to gas after 60 minutes.
I don't think they will. I don't think either bench is overly inspiring. I don't think you've got that many game changers.
Yeah.
So it's, you're going to have to get a big output from that first 15.
Leinster's performance in the previous round, the first half was absolutely sensational, but there is quite a period in the second half where they weren't great. They made some mistakes and they allowed the opposition back into it.
Yeah, they did. And you know, the Jimmy Goprath's try was a bad defensive error. You ordinarily wouldn't have that. I think it was Luke McGrath tucked in behind Ross Maloney in the defensive line, corner flagged, and Jimmy stepped and ran over the top of him as he slipped. Like, those sort of things are one-off. So I think those extra couple of scores might have flattered Wasps a small bit,
so
even though Leinster took the foot off the gas a small bit and gave them an opening.
Okay, so you were not concerned then about that?
No, I always felt that Leinster had another gear to go down and get a finishing score, which they managed to do. I think Wasps were way off their game. Leinster completely rattled Cipriani and he had a bit of a disaster game. But they clearly targeted him, got down, irrespective of where he was in the defensive line, they targeted him. I don't know if there's the scope to do that against this Claremont team. Lopez is probably one of the informed players in Europe, had a good Six Nations, top point scorer. And then even with Nakatake having done his cruciate in the quarterfinal against Toulon, you know, you still have Abendon and Strettel, who are really good finishers. And with Fofana gone, Lamarat and Rougerie, who is working on very old legs at 36.
Yeah.
You know, this, you'd have to imagine that this is his last go at European silverware. You wouldn't begrudge him, except he's playing against my old team.
Yeah. Is there any possibility that at his age he becomes somebody who you try and target?
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's no doubt the juice has gone in his legs. That happens all outside backs and usually before 36. He's not in their starting team. And I'd be excited if I was Gary Ringrose playing against someone who's 14 years older than him. Yeah, a wealth of experience. But I think the zip is a huge part on a dry day and a hard pitch. It's hundreds of a second. It's reaction time. I'm sure Rougerie's brain is still working as fast as ever, but that message doesn't work down to the legs as quickly as it did when you're in your 20s. And it's very frustrating. But, you know, Gary Ringrose should know that in advance and take full advantage of it.
One of the things that's been good about Leinster this season is that you wouldn't say that there's a single game plan that they have, that they always do this, and if they get pushed off that game plan then they struggle. They seem to be able to come up with an opposition-based game plan that always plays to their relative strengths. I know that kind of sounds fairly obvious, but loads of teams don't do that. Loads of teams don't evolve and change what they're trying to do from game to game. So what would the game plan look like this week, do you think?
I think it'll be fast. It'll be similar to Wasps. I think they'll hold the ball for long periods. I think irrespective, very unlike Munster, they play a lot in their own 22 and try and manipulate the backfield. So they play 3 and 4 and 5 phases in their own 22 after receiving a kickoff because they want to draw the wingers forward to then give them a better option on clearing their kicks in behind, you know, or in where the fullback isn't covering. So expect them to do that. I think Munster play an awful lot out of their 22, kick out of it, out of their 22 and out of their own half a huge amount. Leinster like to play keep ball. They're very good at retaining the ball through phases. I think that frustrates opposition, particularly early on, if you can't get your hands on it, as we saw in the Wasps game.
Yeah.
Do you think this may well have to be something similar to the win in Chicago, whereby it's going to be a really high scoring game? The game's going to be played at almost a breathless pace pretty much for the 80 minutes, and we're just going to have to make sure that, well, Leinster will have to make sure that they take every try scoring chance that comes their way, and the line out in the scrum has to be nailed on.
Yeah, well, no matter what, line out in the scrum is going to be vital. Your starters, you'd have to imagine your line out will function pretty well. Maybe that's why Strauss is finding himself in there. Sean Cronin hasn't a huge amount of game time under his belt. But Dev Toner, even though he's playing against some big second rows, you know, if he more often than not commands the line out, and if you can deliver good quality set piece to that back line, they will hurt people. It's just a matter of whether they can convert their opportunities as they have done in the past. And I agree, I think it could be a high scoring game because there's no doubt Claremont will create opportunities for themselves against a very good Leinster defence. But I think it's a bit of the Kevin Keegan way of, you know, we'll score more than you. And
the Wasp pack is massive. Like they had,
yeah, but not as big as this Claremont pack. Like, this is absolutely enormous.
They are monsters, but Leinster have some pedigree with dealing with this kind of a pack this season. It's not like they're walking into something that they haven't had to come across at all this season.
Yeah,
they're obviously going to be prepped for that, or can you be prepped sort of bulk?
But you are looking, look at that back row, you are looking at the guys that ordinarily come off the bench that are now starting. And am I worried because of the form of Dan Levy? No. Jack Conan, if he's fully fit, I know he's carrying a neck injury earlier on in the week. If he plays well, no, he's up to that European standard. Rhys Ruddock, again, we need a huge, you know, unless you need a huge game from him. But any team that's missing out on an informed Josh van der Fleer or Jamie Heaslip or Sean O'Brien is going to be
Healy.
Less off for it. Yeah. Kean Healy, even on the bench. You know, Michael Bent is there, you know, who's been consistent for Leinster this season, but is he going to come on and do the same job as Tadhg Furlong? Absolutely not. So I would fear that because it's going to be such a grueling game, when you do unleash the bench on the hour mark, do you get the same impact that you might ordinarily get when you have different personnel on there?
You mightn't do it at the hour mark. We might see Tadhg Furlong playing 70, 75 minutes.
And I think there's every chance of that. Yeah.
That's no harm, really. I mean, obviously, it would be great to have the front rank subs coming on. Kean Healy obviously isn't any change in the quality, but like, if they do have to play 70-75, they're capable of it, right?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, they are. Those two boys in particular are very good pros, Jack and Tadhg. And it is a big ask in Europe against a powerful scrum to get your tight head to play for 70 minutes or 75 minutes. It really is. That's the reality. Because of the amount of work that Tadhg gets through around the park too, he's not just a scrummager and a lifter.
Yeah.
He gets through an awful lot of clearing out rucks. Defensively, incredibly good. It's one of the best parts of his game.
He does.
You try and isolate tight heads, you know, any team you play against, he's not as easily isolated.
He does always look dead coming off as well. It's like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
fair enough. Yeah, he does. You can have your rest there.
Yeah, he does. He likes the blowout, you know, when the camera's on him, when he's, you know, he's puffing. But in fairness to him, he's due that because he always puts in a great shift.
If Claremont are looking at Leinster, then what are they saying are the weaknesses in Leinster's game and what they've seen from them recently?
I think you look at the second row and the relative inexperience of that back row. I think they'll feel as though they can get the platform up front. Games are won and lost in the pack, and I think they'll just look to grind Leinster down. But then if they provide good quality ball to a confident Lopez, Lamorat's in really, really good form, picked up from where he left off in the Six Nations. He's another one of Europe's in-form players. And a big surprise for me during the Six Nations was Scott Spedding. I thought he was a bit of a one-trick pony and a bit of a Bosch guy, but he runs some great lines, great kicking game. So I think they've actually got quite nice balance to their game this time round. And you get the sense that these perennial underachievers are now, is this their year? But you've got to shake them and remind them that it gets tougher at semi-final level, and that they've fallen at this hurdle many, many times, and remind them why they've done that, because maybe they just lack a small bit of bottle when the going gets tough.
Is there a possibility that Leinster come out and try and take their forwards on early on and kind of say, look, that's fine, we think that you think that this is one of your strengths, but screw you?
I think they take it on by being clever.
Right.
I think they think their way around it rather than
picking the fight.
Yeah, than, you know, being confrontational, because, you know, you come off second best in that, and it's a bit of a minefield mentally for
the game
pack.
Over.
Yeah, it is. A huge component will be what happens at scrum time, because it has such a positive or negative knock-on effect to the mentality of both sets of forwards if they get the ascendancy, or if they're if they get their wings and they're, you know, sprinting backwards.
When you guys are heading over there to play this Claremont team, or a variation of the Claremont team, what was your level of confidence? Because I mean, like, I think it's the width of Darcy's arm basically that wins the game for you.
Yeah.
And it's so, such a narrow margin.
And I do believe that there won't be a huge amount in this game. Leinster are such a good side now, and well-drilled side, that they find themselves, make themselves very difficult to beat. They've got a super strong defence, very well organised, and that's one of the components that Stuart Lancaster brought in early. We saw that early on from game two or three of his involvement. I think it's the evolution of their attacking game that has been the most impressive thing. And we talked, as you said earlier, the variety of how they can play it, the deception that's involved, and you're going to need to be deceptive against a team as big as that. Outthink the French, where maybe they haven't done as much analysis on you as other sides would do. They very much focus on themselves. So I'd imagine there'll be a few tricks up Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen's sleeve that we mightn't have seen so much this season.
That game in 2012 was, if it's a similar game on Sunday, you probably find it difficult to see Leinster winning the game. I mean, that was just a war.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
that was. It was searing heat. And it was a Leinster team that were at their peak, or certainly very close to their peak, and a Clermont team that is largely similar now. There's about four or five faces that we still recognise that have still been beaten again and again and again in the years. I was looking at Aurélien Rougerie's CV today. This is his 17th senior season, and he's won top 14 medal to show for his 17 seasons. Like, it's almost a wasted career, and he knows his chances are running out. And we saw when Munster went to Montpellier to play Clermont 3 years ago, I think it was, and they should have beaten them. Sebo had a chance in the last 10 minutes. They should have beaten them. Clermont had the game won, and they started to freeze again, as we see happen over the years. It happened last season again when they were beaten out the gate by Saracens. I just think there's doubts there to be exploited. If Leinster can just hang in for as long as possible, you get to the last quarter, there's only a try between them, and they're thinking, here we go again.
I don't even know if you have to get to the last quarter. I think Leinster can have a really big opening half an hour and just put, you know, seed of doubt into the Clermont heads. There's no doubt that it's, you just have to scrape under the surface there. Because, yes, they've been in 10 or 11 top 14 finals and won one, Joe Schmidt's final year. You know, they have some great players, but there's a fragility to them, undoubtedly. They just haven't been able to do it over the course of the last century on the big occasion. And, you know, they've had multiple semi-finals, a couple of final European finals, and if you can just plant that seed of doubt in their heads early on, that, you know, you're here to play, it's going to be tough, we're, you know, we've won a few of these competitions, we know how to get the job done, I think that goes a long way towards a positive result towards the end.
It is kind of weird to think of Joe Schmidt being an assistant coach to a team that are a team of bottlers. It's such a, like, you know, because you would have assumed that he could have fixed that.
Although not surprising that they did win it when he was there.
Yeah. Like, they had 8 unsuccessful finals prior to him coming. I think the previous year they lost in the final with him as coach, or maybe even 2 on the bounce. I think that might have been their third in a row where they eventually did get it done. I would draw the comparisons between the team of 12 and this time round, in that it was a very, very confident Joe Schmidt team going over there. They, you know, had won the previous year in a really tough final, but I think you look at the confidence of how Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen have them playing this season too. I think they're a team playing with oodles of confidence and feel as though they have tries in them. You look at the numbers, 120 tries this year, which is double the amount of all of last season.
They come so fast as well.
That's the thing. It's like good sides are able to score very, very quickly and create them, you know, if you're, no panic if you're 12 or 13 points down. So I just get the sense that it'll be still a tight game. I just wonder, do Clermont have too much power for this Leinster team without some key players, particularly in that back row?
It's a really different test as well for Joey Carberry. I mean, we've obviously been raving about him pretty much since just before the game against the All Blacks, as far back as then. And there was just a couple of mistakes in the second half, and afterwards, obviously, nobody wants to dwell too much on them because the first half was so sensational. And that's what this is going to be. It's going to be a period where there are games where he makes mistakes, but he also does amazing things.
But what I enjoyed most about Joey Carberry's performance in the quarterfinals, yes, he made that mistake where he got tackled by Simpson and turned over, and then Wade scored that try that got them back into it. You know, that was against the run of play, as much as the Goppert one was a little bit soft.
Yeah.
So that's why I said I wouldn't panic too much on how those tries were conceded. But the next time he got the ball, he ran it again.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a case of, gosh, I better boot this in the air and play safe. It's just not the way he thinks. And you can't contain that sort of mentality. You've got to let that prosper and give it a small bit of structure.
Yeah.
But you've got to leave the rugby brain, the intuition of someone that's just naturally got a good sense and feel as to what the outlook of the defensive line is and when to kick it and when to go.
Yeah.
And the next one he got, he made a half break and then so we're off again.
A lot was made of the toe tap from Joe Simpson. It was the right decision for Carberry if he had just got away from him. It was only a couple of inches away from being in the clear and setting up another counter attack.
Any other player other than a fresh Joe Simpson on the pitch and he's burnt them. You know, it's just maybe Wade with the exception, but Joe Simpson's very quick, made a great tackle, and they didn't manage to resource the ruck and turned over.
There were mistakes made even after the tackle. Like,
but you're going to get mistakes. You just have to make sure that they're not critical very often when you do make them.
Is that coachable or is that just a thing?
Do you just let that prosper and let that play? And I don't think you try and coach it too much.
It seems him and Ringrose have that thing where it, like, ooh.
Yeah, that's what differentiates them from other players of their age group and their peers, because they see things differently and they make good decisions more often than not. And I think Gary makes good decisions 98-99% of the time, not throwing 50-50s when he should. He loves an offload, but he knows when to hold it. I think Joey's a small bit looser. It suits him to be looser at fullback than it does at 10. I think potentially that could be his position.
Right.
Because he's so exciting. He's got that footwork of a back three player that will have any defensive line in trouble.
Yeah.
On returning, you know, poor kicks.
It gets him into the team immediately as well, while Sexton is still playing out the last couple of amazing years of his career, hopefully.
It's not discouraged either. When you were chatting to Stuart Lancaster and you asked him about that Joe Simpson tackle, and he said, but look, yeah, you analyse it, but if you start hauling players over the coals for things like that, I can guarantee you he'll never score another counter-attacking try in the rest of his career.
Yeah,
I mean, it would be criminal to try and stamp that kind of attitude out of Joey Carberry. So just let it go, let it flourish.
The one for Conan's try, identifying Launchbury, was the second last defender along with Wade, and just doing going on that little arc. Interesting Wade throwing the. Oh, it was interesting Kirtley Beale.
Yeah.
And through the pass out to Fergus McFadden, got it back to Conan. Like, that was a joy to watch.
It was.
And that, you have to let that grow and be, it is his game. Let it just, you know, evolve into what sort of player we expect him to become.
That was like watching one of those great Australian teams from the Gary Ella era against like an Irish team at that stage when there was no defensive structure. It was just pass. Oh, look, we're in. And it was done so slowly, it felt like this is all, we can see this. That was why it was so beautiful.
Do you know, I think there's a lesson for Leinster to learn as well on scoring those tries too, where he threw the pass to Fergus McFadden, Beale committed to the tackle and didn't take him out. It was criminal. If you're gone from the game, you've got to put the guy that's throwing the pass on the floor too. Beale, you know, gives him a little shove. He gets back into play, gets a second touch and throws it to Conan. And that's the difference. That score doesn't happen if Beale knocks him down. So I think as much as when you score tries, you have to, you know, you celebrate them and there might be a thing of beauty, I think there's always a message to be learnt from a defensive point of view as to why did that happen and don't let it happen to us.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about Munster Saracens, which kicks off tomorrow. Dave and Liam Tolan are going to be covering that one for us.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, you're very welcome back. 53106 is the text number. If you want to get in touch, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball. And Brian, we haven't talked yet about the Munster Saracens game. And I guess, again, as much as the absence of Sean O'Brien is going to prove crucial, or certainly it's a massive worry for Leinster fans, not having the best scrum half in Europe for Munster is a huge blow here. And it kind of, it's a bit worrying the way the whole thing has unfolded.
Yeah. No one really knows like how bad things are for Conor Murray. To go back to that Welsh game, you know, he looked in massive distress.
Yeah.
Couldn't pass properly with it. And any shoulder injury, you know, your primary role as a scrum half is to give good service, so it's going to have a knock-on effect. And obviously, I think it was his pass from left to right was the one that he was struggling with, so I think it's a left shoulder. But you got the sense, because Conor doesn't get injured that much and he's tough, so if he was able to get on with it, he would have. Just the fact that each week has come along, that he's not included in the team, he's not making the quarter final. I know there was a bit of smoke and mirrors that week of him at training, posting on social media that, you know, looking forward to the game, and he missed that, and yet we're 3 weeks later from that and we still aren't seeing him in the team.
And Warren Gatland's not sure if he's going to play again this season to make the Lions, and it's interesting that Gatland is the one who's given us the information.
Yeah,
he's the first guy that mentioned the nerve issue, the neck issue, the neurologist, yet we would have been getting weekly updates initially from Ireland and then from Munster, and there was no talk of this. Maybe the neck issue and the nerve damage has occurred in the last week, perhaps not, but it does seem that the decision to keep him on after half time in Cardiff is now starting to come back and haunt Conor Murray, haunt Munster, and possibly haunt the Lions.
This happens all the time, right?
Yeah, it does. You only feed the media a certain amount of information. You can't be too truthful about it. So you always are hopeful that the best case scenario might unfold, that there might be a miraculous recovery, or it might be quicker than anticipated. But you always give a worst case scenario. But in this case, it seems as though it's been the worst case scenario has continued on and on and on.
How often would you guys have been getting nerve block injections?
Nerve block injections, I don't know you guys. I don't think they advertise them.
No.
You guys don't leave training and go, see, off to see the local doc to get a nerve blocker. But I would have gotten a little bit of stuff in prior to getting my neck surgery. I think it's about, you know, trying to promote circulation as well. And I had osteophytes in the canal with my nerves feeding down into my arm, and that's why I was getting pins and needles. And essentially that's why I had to go and get my neck surgery, because they had to clear out those osteophytes. And then all of a sudden, the pins and needles, which had been a regular occurrence, it felt alien that I didn't have them after my surgery. That's how bizarre.
Look, I can use my hand again.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, I can pass from my right hand side. Who would have thought? It wasn't just me being selfish all these years.
So we shouldn't be too concerned. Like, this stuff happens, and like,
do you know what? You of course be concerned, because Munster aren't as good a team without him. Lions won't be as good a team without him. But I suppose you'd even hope that it won't be as bad as Warren has made out, that there's concerns over him potentially touring.
Okay. As it stands, you were pointing this out in the ad break there, there's no scrum half on the bench for Munster.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know whether there's a bit of mind games in that, because I just don't know how Rory Scannell is going to play after hobbling off last weekend. On the Monday report, Erasmus said that he thought it was very serious with Scannell, and that he didn't hold out much hope, and now he's been named. So I think there's scope for Saili to go in there, and that would open a spot on the bench for a scrum half. I think it's very, very dangerous territory if you're looking at Ian Keatley or Darren Sweetnam to be covering nine.
McCall is not having this same conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardly going to strike him as a bolt from the blue when he sees Saili wearing the centre's jersey and there being a replacement scrum half on the bench.
Looking at that, you're only short of calling Bergamasco in for a role at nine there too. You know, that's crazy. But and I don't even know, did Sweetnam play a small bit of nine beforehand? Maybe Keatley, he's a good footballer, but it's an art
not
form.
Not in a semi final.
No. And if that is the case, and they do see, and Saracens do see that, you know, Conor Murray thought he got rough treatment against Glasgow.
Yeah.
And the pool stages, you could be sure Duncan Williams will get extra treatment, knowing what's on the bench.
Yeah. So the difference between Scannell and Saili is obviously Scannell can be that kind of second brain.
Yeah. He's a lovely left foot too.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that at 10 and 12. Very educated boot. Plays a bit of 10 himself, so he does. I think he sees things very well. I really like Scannell as a player. He's come on, but he's tough too. He carries hard, gets them over the advantage line. Saili's strength would be that, But I think Scannell is very capable, and the fact that he's starting ahead of him, and Touti is now the 13, and Saïli is on the bench, says an awful lot as to how much they've invested in Scannell.
Yeah, does it change then how they play? I mean, it has to change how they play, really, if he doesn't start.
No, because Saïli's still a nice passer of the ball too. I think you probably reduce your pass quality a small bit there, but not a whole lot. So I don't think it's certainly not catastrophic, because Saïli is a very good player. And as well, when you get to midfield, and that's exactly what Munster will want to do against Saracens, you get to midfield to split that really hard press. If you get to the edges with them, they get very comfortable knowing they have seven or eight defenders together, and they just fly up and they're not even thinking about who their man is. Yeah. They're just getting into the space. Whereas if you can get into the middle, you can't get as aggressive on your line speed because your resources have been split. So you got, if you want to marshal the backfield as well, which gives, you know, into the middle, gives you a better kicking option. If you get Zeebo on the left and Bladendall on the right, you have to play with your wingers on a half with full back in the middle. So therefore the rest of the defensive line can't be as aggressive.
Okay, so
you see a lot of sides that have a good go at Saracens try and get to the middle. It's sometimes difficult to get there. You strike wide and then the next play to get to the middle can be hard yards, but if you do that effectively, I think you do slow down the knock-on effect of their aggressive line speed.
How worried are you that Saracens are just going to perform the way that they have performed over the last 18 months?
Yeah, I'd be a bit concerned. I felt during the week that just the stars are aligned for Munster this year, but seeing that bench, seeing no Conor Murray, would concern me. And just looking, I've watched a fair bit of Saracens, and they're a team that looks as though they have a sixth gear when they need it. Against yeah. Glasgow, they got within six of them after scoring a couple of early tries, and then it was almost they had a quiet word in the huddle and said, "Enough of this messing, right? Let's put them to the sword." Three tries, bang, blown away. So they have that firepower. Ashton is in rare old form for them. He's almost unanimously or universally hated. I think he's a terrific player, guy that I would love having in my team. Yeah, whatever about the swallow dive, but the work rate that this guy does for his team and how much he offers himself as the extra man is the difference between them scoring and not scoring so often.
He's kind of a very Eddie Jones player, I would have thought, ultimately.
Yeah, he is, but his defence is crap. You know, that's like the Lee Jones try against Glasgow, that crossfield kick, which is a skill that Bladendall absolutely has in him too. You know, flat kick across to Jones, stepped inside Good, and Ashton went high in him and he fended him off. Like, it was a bit of a pathetic effort. He definitely has question marks around his defence, but his work rate and his go forward and his willingness to run support line after support line and not get the ball and continue to do that for an 80 minute period is what stands him apart, and that's why he picks up a lot of easy tries.
Yeah.
When everyone else gets tired, he's super super fit, and that's why he picks up 30-40 metre popped off the shoulder from Farrell or half breaks, because he's there time and again.
If Munster do this, it's like an unbelievable achievement, because they seem to be overmatched just in terms of where Saracens have come and the depth that they have.
Yeah, I think it would be an incredible achievement. I think the back row is going to have to have a monster. They're going to have to keep the Vunipola brothers quiet. It's bizarrely, Berger is on the bench. So there must be, Jackson Ray is in, there must be an injury concern, or maybe they're playing mind games themselves. Hamilton, as their sub second row, is question marks over his fitness as well, and Duplessis starts for them an awful lot. So I don't know what Mark McCall is thinking as well, but if Sarri's hit top form, I think Munster will do extremely well to contain them.
They have an awful lot of aggression though on the Munster park, don't they? An awful lot of edge. It's an incredibly talented back row. You've got Dunnock Ryan and Billy Hollander, who are two kind of real gritty abrasive fellas as well. Kilcoyne is probably going to be almost beside himself with the adrenaline in the first 20 minutes, to the point where there's a couple of lads on that Munster park need to make sure they don't find themselves in the bin at some stage in the first half, where you just lose that balance of aggression and making sure that you don't lose your head. But I don't think Munster have anything to fear in the pack.
No, I think you look at the second row pairing, you know, Would you take Cruz and Itoje over Ryan and
you would
and,
obviously, but those two make up for an awful lot
of
what they give away in terms of maybe pure talent. I mean, Itoje could be one of the greats, but we still have to see that.
Yeah, but it's coming. You know, I think we've seen a lot of really good stuff from Cruz. Is a real workhorse. Down. Yeah, they'll want to prove a point.
Didn't get into the Lawrence squad. Maybe you made a mistake, Warren.
Yeah, and when I was at a function with Warren a couple of months ago, and he mentioned Dunnick Ryan as a possible tourist, he was definitely having a look at him because he knows what he can offer, and he's been one of their form players this year. They're going to need everyone to really excel. They're going to have one of their bigger performances of the season because this is a different level of opposition that they've come across. And
it is their back row that gives you a bit of hope, though.
Yeah, it is.
It's genuinely world class.
Well, like you look at Peter Mahoney in a team, and it's brilliant to see him on that Lions tour. You know, those performances against England and the quarter final, he's a man inspired at the moment. O'Donnell is the one. Is the glue with it all as well. He lets those two play their game and he does all the tidy up work as well.
He brings so much balance to it, doesn't he?
He really does. You know, where there's big ball carrying and a lot of a lot of positivity with that from Stander, I think you still have to get guys clearing out rucks. You've got to get someone over the ball, slowing it down.
Making
both
tackles.
O'Donnell and Peter O'Mahony are very good at that. One thing I would say about the Munster defence, which is slightly different to the Saracens, is I think their scramble is better than Saracens. Their appetite and their hunger to get back at the defensive line when a line break is made is sort of unrivaled this year. They are averaging a little over 11 points conceded in the whole group stage, the number one in Europe. So if you look at those numbers compared to number two, which is actually Saracens, which is 14 points a game, that's miserly.
Yeah.
You know, if you think you're only going to score, if you can contain a team to 11 points, you'll definitely back yourself to score 12 or 13 for sure.
Another 15-12 tomorrow, or that kind of a scoreline.
Maybe. I think, like, you know,
Blindell versus Owen Farrell.
Maybe. I hope not. I hope we get some scores, but they are brutally miserly. Leinster, we talked a bit about Leinster's defence being very good. Munster, I think, are almost a step on from that. You'll get a very tight game. I don't think you're going to see 30 points scored, but you never know. When it comes to semi-finals, sometimes all bets are off.
They keep saying that in terms of the Ireland coaching jobs, that they want people from within the system. Does that rule Mark McCall out? Does he have to come back and take a job in Ireland at some point for us to go, actually, what you've done there is pretty impressive?
I don't think so. I think, you know, your CV is your CV, irrespective of where you do it. You know, there's big credibility to winning Europe. We know in Ireland what it's like, what it takes to win in Europe. The fact that he's managed to do it, winning the double last year, if they could win
there's not much more he can do.
Yeah, it's like, what, come back in and coach Corinthians and then, you know, make your way back into the system.
Well, if or when McCall does end up as part of the Irish coaching ticket, he's not going to be the backs coach. Like, he's coming over for the big job. He'll be picking who he wants. I don't think there's any possibility that he's going to have a role within the Irish setup that isn't.
I think he's a very different coach than Joe Schmidt too. Joe's incredibly hands-on.
Yeah.
As much as he has, backs coach, kicking coach, and forwards defence.
Yeah.
You know, he's very involved. I think Mark McCall allows his coaching team to do a lot of the on-field stuff, and he is in. I think it is a director of rugby role.
Yeah.
So it's slightly different. It's apples and pears with regard to what's been in existence in Ireland.
Yeah, it is interesting though that he failed in Ireland and then goes and reanimates his career, and we still haven't kind of quite learned how to do that with coaches who have a failing. You know, we don't say be part of some kind of pathway where you can learn from those mistakes.
Yeah, the lesson to be learned there is plug yourself into a system that's likely to succeed. You look at the money that's involved in Saracens, the setup that they have there. They have a very, very tight-knit group of players. You can see they enjoy playing for one another. I think you see a lot of the English players coming back from international, and it's not all, you know, Six Nations is done. Let's try and wind down or look forward to the summer. They love getting back into the Saracens jerseys. They back up the end of Six Nations and make sure that, you know, I think four or five of them were playing the following week after the Ireland defeat. So I think you look at how close they are and how the bond that they have. I think that is a real strength of Saracens, and maybe it won't take the Munster crowd and the passion that Munster will bring won't take as much effect on them, because I think they're a tight and knit group themselves.
So you'd make both the Saracens and Claremont favourites?
I think so. I think both of them to edge it, but yeah, both games will be tight still. You know, you look, because of those defence, because of that Munster defence, they will not be far away. And I think because of Leinster's attack, they won't be far away, along with a good defence too. So you live in hope, but I think they're both slight underdogs, even with Munster playing in Dublin because of Conor Murray being out.
Yeah. All right, Brian, great stuff. Enjoy the game. Thanks for listening.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.